This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. President Trump says that he's confident defeating a multi-state lawsuit challenging his emergency declaration to pay for the southern border wall. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani.
Some 16 states are suing, calling the declaration unconstitutional. The president says he figured legal action was coming and predicts he'll beat it.
We have absolute right to do that. I have an absolute right to call national security. We need strong borders.
But Democrats say it's executive overreach and want Republicans to stand with them against what House Speaker Nancy Pelosi calls a brazen assault on the Constitution. A top advisor here has said the president's prepared to issue his first veto if Congress votes to disapprove of the declaration. Sagar Magani at the White House.
President Trump says there's no magical date for reaching a trade deal with China, suggesting again the March 1st deadline for new tariffs could put off. Mr. Trump had set the deadline for hiking tariffs on $200 million in Chinese imports from 10 to 25% if no trade agreement is reached. Talks resumed Tuesday in Washington between lower-level deputies from each side before senior-level talks take over on Thursday. Former acting FBI Chief Andrew McCabe says top congressional leaders did not object in 2017 when he told them the agency had opened a counterintelligence investigation of President Trump on suspicion that he might have ties to Russia. McCabe told NBC News on Tuesday he informed eight key lawmakers, including the top two Republicans, shortly after he opened the probe. Days before, Mr. Trump had fired FBI Director James Comey, who was leading the investigation of Russian meddling into the 2016 presidential election. McCabe's new book about his time at the FBI and the Trump investigation was published on Tuesday. This is VOA News. President Trump said Tuesday that he wants to see North Korea eventually give up its nuclear weapons program, but adds he's not in any rush because U.S. relations with Pyongyang are good going into next week's summit in Vietnam.
I'd just like to see ultimately denuclearization of North Korea. I think we will see that ultimately. I have no pressing time schedule.
He said his second meeting with Kim Jong-un would be very exciting, but did not disclose what he hoped would be achieved. A federal judge has ordered longtime Trump confidant Roger Stone to appear in court Thursday to consider whether to revoke his bail after he posted a controversial picture on Instagram. Stone posted a photo of Judge Amy Berman Jackson Monday with what appeared to be crosshairs near her head. He said it was misinterpreted and dismissed any suggestion he was trying to threaten her. Stone has pleaded not guilty to lying to Congress, witness tampering, and obstructing a congressional investigation into the 2016 presidential election. A new congressional report says senior White House officials pushed a project to share nuclear power technology with Saudi Arabia, despite the objections of ethics and national security officials. AP correspondent Chad Day.
Right now, lawmakers on both sides of the aisle have expressed concerns that transferring nuclear power to Saudi Arabia without the proper safeguards in place could lead to them weaponizing the material and having another nuclear power in the Middle East.
That's AP correspondent Chad Day. President Trump signed a directive Tuesday to outline the establishment of the Space Force as the newest branch of the military. Vice President Mike Pence spoke to reporters about it.
America is leading in space once again. But in this respect, the president is calling on the Department of Defense to fashion what we have literally been working on for months, consulting with members of Congress and military experts.
If approved by Congress, the Space Force would be part of the Air Force, just as the Marine Corps is part of the Navy. Last week, the Defense Intelligence Agency released a report that found China and Russia have taken steps to challenge the United States in space by developing weaponized satellites, energy weapons, and surveillance networks. The U.S. Embassy in Haiti has confirmed the arrest of U.S. citizens and told VOA's Creole service it's seeking consular access for them as soon as possible. In an interview Monday, the Haitian National Police spokesperson said the men were arrested during a routine check on Sunday, and Haitian national, two Serbs, and five Americans were among the detained. He said police found assault rifles and pistols in three vehicles. There's been concern in Haiti that the group had planned to be rolled out under the cover of the massive protests and looting that rocked the capital for 10 consecutive days, leaving at least seven people dead. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, February 20th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Burundi and Somalia call for an urgent summit of countries contributing troops to the African Union mission in Somalia.
Since 2007, Burundi soldiers in Somalia have made the ultimate sacrifice. Somali people are grateful and will always remember for what you have done for Somalia.
Somali President Mohamed Farmajo, a leading Malawian presidential candidate, denies being offered millions of dollars to endorse incumbent President Mutharika. Liberia's Chief Justice denies a motion to recuse himself in the impeachment trial of an associate justice. And the brother of former Sierra Leone President Ernest Bai Koroma pays thousands of dollars in back taxes.
The tax aspect of this investigation is really a minute part of it. The main investigation itself is ongoing. That is an investigation into the actions of the National Telecommunications Company.
Francis Ben Kaifala is the head of Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission. A Zimbabwe lawyer representing protesters says he was attacked allegedly by a ruling party supporter. And Guinea-Bissau says tourism is rising, but how will it manage the development? Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Burundi and Somalia are calling for countries contributing troops to the African Union mission in Somalia, known as AMISOM, to review the decision to withdraw its soldiers. The call came yesterday at the end of a two-day state visit to Burundi by Somali President Mohamed Farmajo. Moses Haviarimana reports from Bujumbura.
After a two-day working visit by the Somalia President Mohamed Farmajo to Burundi, where he met President Pierre Nkurunziza, the two heads of state agreed to call for an urgent summit of heads of state and government of the AMISOM troop contributing countries. Burundi President Pierre Nkurunziza said there is need to come to a common understanding with all AMISOM troop contributing countries. He says that there is a decision which was taken by the Peace and Security Council of the African Union, which Burundians didn't welcome, and that he knows Somalia wasn't pleased with it. The Burundian president said that's why they have called for an urgent summit so as the decision can be reconsidered. After a closed-door meeting between the two presidents, President Farmajo said that Burundi had greatly contributed in restoring peace and security in his country, and that as a result, the capital city, Mogadishu, was freed and liberated from Al-Shabaab by Burundian forces, Ugandan and Somali national forces.
Since 2007, Burundi soldiers in Somalia have made the ultimate sacrifice and assure the people of Burundi, your soldiers' sacrifices will not go in vain. Somali people are grateful and will always remember for what you have done for Somalia. I'm confident we will turn our security challenges into common progress and economic opportunity for our two people.
The visit comes a few weeks before the deadline of February 28th for Burundi to withdraw 1,000 troops from the AMISOM in Somalia, a decision that Burundi didn't welcome, arguing that the move contradicts the decision made earlier by the Coordination Committee in Somalia, which indicated that all troops from peace-contributing countries will start withdrawal by February this year. Burundi says that AMISOM troops be withdrawn on proportional basis from each of the five troop-contributing countries. Somalia president said that the visit will also strengthen the two countries' bilateral relation.
This historic visit will indeed strengthen our political and security cooperation to bring peace and stability in Somalia. Your government played a very significant role to contribute to peace and security in the region, and particularly the Burundi National Defense Force, who was one of the first countries to land in Somalia in 2009 and fought courageously against Al-Shabaab.
Burundi government receives $18 million from the African Union quarterly as compensation for the soldiers in the AMISOM mission. The country is expected to serve as the Peace and Security Council member for 3 years after being elected on February 8th, a move which the government believes has given its mission of not withdrawing the 1,000 troops a lifeline. Moses Aviarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
A leading Malawian presidential candidate denies he has been offered 5 billion kwacha, about a little over $400 million, to endorse incumbent President Peter Mutharika in the country's May 21st election. Local published reports say the family of former Malawian President Bakili Muluzi was offered the money by the ruling Democratic Progressive Party, the DPP, in exchange for Atupile Muluzi, the former president's son, to withdraw from the presidential race and endorse incumbent President Mutharika. The younger Muluzi is the presidential candidate of the United Democratic Front Party, the UDF. He says bribery has no place in the UDF. To support him.
We have not been offered anything to that effect, and we've not accepted any payment, no bribe from the DPP to withdraw from the elections. Bribery does not have a domain in UDF, and I myself personally. And
I believe the question that the article raises is that one of the reasons they claim you are still in the president's cabinet and they don't understand, maybe there's something worked out and that's why you are still being maintained.
The whole claim is mere political propaganda and is coined by those that I believe are failed political elements who are dreading the rage of UDF fire ahead of the May 2019 elections. I have made it also very clear that my position as minister is extremely important for the stability, and it would be irresponsible for me to leave the ministry and the population without the support and stability that they require.
May I ask you, the elections are coming up in May, and there's a lot of movement among political parties, some of them talking about alliances. Are you thinking about supporting or joining any other party to form an alliance?
Well, the UDF is a very big party, and it is a party that is built on strong foundations of serving Malawi and the citizenry. And it remains our relentless zeal to jealously safeguard these pillars. Our wish is to serve Malawians from the many challenges facing them, and this can only be achieved if we assume the country's driving seat. I believe I have the experience to lead this country, and of course the UDF has the experience to be able to deliver a real transformation for our people.
You saw this part of the article that says that an agreement has been reached so that former President Bakili Muluzi will not be prosecuted. Did you see that?
I find this whole fabrication laughable and surprising. It is mere fabrication. And let me just also add that UDF is a very big institution and entity on the country's political arena. And my presentation of presidential nomination papers only 2 weeks ago only communicates the volumes about the party's intent to compete and not just participate in the May election. I'm also aware that there are political elements who are dreading the fact that the UDF is competing in the next elections, and they'll do anything to try to discourage us, to discourage our supporters, and of course to distract us as well from the weeks ahead and the months ahead that we have to the polls.
You said that the UDF is strong, it's a strong party. I mean, I asked you earlier about a possibility of alliance. Do you think the UDF, because it's strong, can go it alone?
I believe so, absolutely. I really do believe so. I'm very much in touch with the thinking of Malawians, and I think we are very well placed to poise a very strong challenge ahead of the next elections in a few weeks' time.
You are a cabinet minister, so what is it that you're going to present to Malawians to distinguish you from the government in which you work?
You've got to remember, we have been campaigning for the past 5-6 years as leader of the party on the issue of stability. We have been able to manage the stability in the last 4 and 5 years together, and we have demonstrated to Malawians that we can work together to build our country, provide stability, to restore credibility to the Malawi economy. And I think we have achieved a great deal.
Atupile Muluzi is the presidential candidate of the United Democratic Front Party of Malawi. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lee Longwe. Today is Wednesday, February 20th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is now 15 minutes past the hour. The Chief Justice of Liberia, Francis Kopoi, has denied a motion to recuse himself in the impeachment trial of Associate Supreme Court Justice Kabina Janet. Defense lawyers Monday called for the Chief Justice's recusal because they say he is conflicted to preside over the trial. But in his ruling denying the motion in the chambers of the Liberian Senate on Tuesday, Chief Justice Kopoi said the defense lawyers did not provide enough legal grounds for recusal.
As I've said time and again, it is not by my own doing, but by the dictates of the Constitution of Liberia that I should preside over this impeachment proceeding. The Constitution does not say who presides over impeachment proceedings involving the President, Vice President, or an Associate Justice in the absence of the Chief Justice, or when the Chief Justice is incapacitated or disqualified. Thus, as I see it, for me to recuse myself from performing the constitutional duty of presiding over an impeachment proceeding as the movement has requested of me, the movement must clearly establish legal and or factual grounds that partake of conflict of interest that will work to the injury of the movement by my presiding over the impeachment proceeding. The question then is, has the movement established any legal and or factual ground for me not to preside over this impeachment proceeding? The answer to me is no. The movement has not established that I have an interest in the impeachment trial or that I am related to any of the parties in the case. The movement has only contended that I participated in and signed a judgment in the concerned case along with three other justices. Therefore, I am, quote, conflicted. But if I deviated from the general rule in the concerned case, a fair and impartial proceeding would not be conducted when I preside over this impeachment trial involving him. I hold that I am not conflicted and I do not or did not deviate from the law in the concerned case to warrant my recusal from presiding over this impeachment proceeding. The motion to recuse is therefore denied and dismissed.
That was Francis Kopoi, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Liberia. In Sierra Leone, the brother of former President Ernest Bai Koroma has paid nearly $128,000 in back taxes in an out-of-court settlement with the Sierra Leone Anti-Corruption Commission. But critics say the commission should have delved deeper in Thomas Koroma's business dealings with the Sierra Leone government when it was led by his brother, former President Koroma. Francis Ben Kaifala, head of Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission, says the tax expert is a minute part of the investigation. He says the main investigation into the action of the National Telecommunications Company continues.
We are investigating certain likelihood of corruption within the national telecommunications sector. Particularly, there was a building project which we believe that the process of awarding the contract and many things relating to that building project were itself done in a way that require our attention. And whilst we're doing so, we found out that contracts were awarded to the brother of the former president of the country. And on that contract, he was basically not paying tax. We confronted him with evidence and what he owes, and he admitted to owing it. And he entered into an agreement with the commission to pay back.
So the $127,547 is back taxes?
Yes, it's unpaid taxes. Tax avoidance is one of the mandates under the Anti-Corruption Act that we can investigate.
But, Mr. Chairman, would that be it for Mr. Thomas Koroma? Because the article says that some critics would like for your commission to go deeper in your investigation of Mr. Koroma's business dealings with the government that his brother headed, the former president of Sierra Leone.
Yes, of course, the tax aspect of this investigation is really a minute part of it. The main investigation itself is ongoing. That is an investigation into the actions of the National Telecommunications Company, and there are many actors involved. So it's definitely not the end of the matter. We are still continuing to probe deep into what happened at the NAFCOM.
Are there other former government officials or business people that have done similar thing that Mr. Thomas Kuruma has done? Are they coming to your commission and offering to settle?
Yes, I mean, the commission has had several investigations that have happened within the past 7 months while I have been head of the Anti-Corruption Commission. And our recovery at the moment stands at about 11.5 billion yuans, which is like $1,500,000 within that period. Basically, when we investigate and we find out that you owe the country a certain amount of money, we take a judgment as to whether to pay back it is in the best interest of the country or we should prosecute you. We are trying to balance prosecution and recovery. So in respect of recovery, our recoveries are very high. We are recovering at a completely unprecedented rate for the country. But we are also prosecuting. Our conviction rates in court in terms of prosecutions currently stands at 100%.
I wonder what's the verdict so far from the Sierra Leone people about the way your commission has gone about doing its job.
People of Sierra Leone are very happy, particularly because we are gaining respectability within the international circles. The indices that are across the world are showing positive signs. We are moving upwards most every index of the world. And the country itself, corruption perception has dropped from 70% where it was last year to 40% where it is. Last year, only 40% of the citizens believed in the fight against corruption. Here, there is 66% of the citizens believed in government efforts to fight corruption, according to Afrobarometer. We are succeeding on May, and we will continue doing so. The people of Sierra Leone are very happy.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. We are so happy to always have you on Daybreak Africa. Thank you.
Thank you.
Francis Benkafala is the head of Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. A Zimbabwean lawyer who represents protesters were arrested by state security agents during recent public protests over the high cost of living in the country says he was attacked yesterday in a magistrate's court in the Midlands capital, Gweru, by a man allegedly linked to the ruling ZANU-PF party. Brian Dube spoke with Gibbs Dube of VOA Zimbabwe service.
I just had a sudden click on my shoulder, on my collarbone to the right. Then I turned and found that the guy was holding me and he started to threaten me, saying I'd kick him off and he was going to deal with me. He was a powerful person. Then I asked him who he was. Then he said, since I did not know him, I was going to know him well. And that's when my colleague also intervened to say, what is your issue? And he started fuming and went and said that when the court started, we reported to the magistrate and eventually the court adjourned. I had the adjournment. He actually followed us to where we were seated waiting to get back in court and he proceeded with the same threat. That's when he introduced himself saying he was a very senior lawyer and he was connected. He was going to deal with me. And eventually I reported to the police and to the law side. I became to then know that person to be Nomadai Shay Chinyok. I did not know him specially. I just heard about his name, which being said to be the person who is coordinating the MPF matters against the MDC officials in Midland.
Brian Dube is a Zimbabwean lawyer based in the Midlands capital, Gweru. He spoke with Gibbs Dube of VOA Zimbabwe service. But ZANU-PF Central Committee member Believe Gaule tells Gibbs Dube that Chinyoka may have acted on his own or was trying to impress President Emmerson Mnangagwa, who recently threatened to punish human rights doctors and lawyers.
I don't think that has anything to do with what the president said during his address at one of his rallies some few days ago. This has something to do with someone maybe who is trying to settle some scores, especially his enemies, especially the lawyer, and taking advantage maybe of what the president was saying. The president is own way of dealing with that kind of a situation whereby he talked of some people who really played a part in this demonstration that took place. And some people who really hijacked the agenda of any other people who wanted to demonstrate, to turn this thing into an ugly thing.
So, but at the end of the day, if a president makes such utterances, I guess there are some people who can end up doing some of these things. Is it not the case, Mr. Kaule?
It's very true. It happens because some people at times would want to appear as if they are doing the right thing
Let's say if someone knows that that very somebody was involved maybe in doing ABCD during those days, someone then come in and take advantage of that.
Believe Gaule is a member of the ruling ZANU-PF's Central Committee. He spoke with Gibbs Dube of VOA Zimbabwe Service. Tourism is on the rise in Cape Verde, but how will they manage the development? Philippe Duzile, a hotel consultant with Hogwaf Group's France and West Africa department, spoke to Ricky Stryak about the reasons behind the growth and the potential pitfalls.
What's happening today is that Egypt or Turkey or the rest of North African destination, perhaps with the exception of Morocco, are challenged. And Cape Verde is within the same range, offering a new destination with nice weathers, unspoiled beaches, and very attractive prices. So all this combined could explain the success of Cape Verde as the new resort destination, active all year round for European holidaymakers.
Do you have any statistics about how many more visitors Cape Verde has seen in the last couple of years compared to the years prior years?
Cape Verde is recording a double-digit growth over past years because of the development of air connection and a very, very solid growth national lodging census there, as many, many rooms are opening and many tour operators are putting Cape Verde on top of their list of favorite destinations.
What are some of the challenges to the tourism industry in Cape Verde?
It's all about tourism in islands, you know. That's a very mono-oriented destination, 100% a position on sand and beach tourism. I would say the destination is very appealing as it is today because it's not overdeveloped. And the risk that could be ahead is to have too many hotels. So a destination is something very fragile, but if they are clever enough to master the development and to keep the quality at the right point and stay away from overdevelopment, I think there's a real green light ahead for Cape Verdean tourism for the next decade.
Even you mentioned the potential hazard of overbuilding. What about the interaction between tourism growth and the environment? Because as we all know, Cape Verde's environment is an ecosystem. It is, you know, it's quite untouched. So there is that danger, I would think, to overdevelopment.
Yeah, you're right. This is absolutely the point. If you compare, for instance, to the terrible images that has been broadcasted about the Maldives and the way they were treating their waste, that was terrible, and I think it really shocked the tourism community at the global scale. So how will they be treating the waste? How they will be managing water and sanitization, but also recycling grey waters? All this is really part of the challenge, and this is definitely a point that Cape Verde needs to look at very carefully.
That was Philippe Duzillet, hotel consultant with Hogwaf. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Paris. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Burundi and Somalia are calling for countries contributing troops to the African Union mission in Somalia to review Burundi's decision to withdraw its soldiers. The call came yesterday at the end of a two-day state visit to Burundi by Somali President Mohamed Farmajo. The Chief Justice of Liberia, Francis Kokpoi, has denied a motion to recuse himself in the impeachment trial of Associate Supreme Court Justice Kabina Janet. Defense lawyers Monday called for the Chief Justice's recusal because they said he is conflicted to preside over the trial. And in Sierra Leone, the brother of former President Ernest Bai Koroma has paid nearly $128,000 in back taxes. And that's it for this Wednesday, February 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Stray Talk Africa, we'll discuss the results of the February 16th Nigerian presidential and National Assembly elections. What concerns and issues swayed the voters the most? an in-depth discussion on the Nigerian elections on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, this is Peter Clote of VOA Africa. I am in Nigeria to cover the general election. Listen to my daily report when you tune in to our news shows. Africa News Tonight, Daybreak Africa, Nightline Africa, and International Edition for the latest from Lagos.